Good morning, folks. Hope you are having a great Wednesday morning. Looks like we're going to have a little rain in the forecast. So as you drive around the city, just a little friendly reminder, slow down, take it easy. No sense in overextending yourself, driving around or anything else. Kids are out of school. Let me remind you about that as well. I've seen them. They're all over the place. So just be aware of your surroundings. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to go open lines in the back half of the 12 o'clock hour. A lot of people texting in, wanting to say a lot of things about a lot of different issues. Let's talk about it in the open, transparently. Anything you want to ask me, we'll talk about it. But we're going to start the 12 o'clock hour off with Representative Jessica Domang. And I've had Representative Domang on the show several times before about the Louisiana shrimping industry. As you know, the Louisiana legislative session ended Monday, and a number of bills were passed in order to protect that industry. We'll talk about those bills and the impact that we think that they're going to have. At 11 o'clock, we have Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. And in the back half of that hour, Todd Murphy, Chief Operating Officer with M Wealth Advisors, financial advisor for Raymond James Financial Services. And he's G&O Inc.'s public policy chair as well. We'll get a recap of the legislative session as it relates to strengthening our economy and the impact there. Billy Nungesser, the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Louisiana, will join us to talk about a number of issues at 10:30. You have heard me talk about this quite a few times. We have this U.S. Senate race coming up. You've heard me talk about this blood oath that basically was entered into between Julia Letlow, a candidate for U.S. Senate, and Donald Trump. And we haven't really seen it tested yet. And I was kind of looking through the internet to see where she was on this anti-weaponization fund, this $1.8 billion fund that the Trump administration, as a result of a compromise of the settlement of a lawsuit against the IRS, wanted to establish. So folks that feel like that the federal government was overreaching or too proactive in their prosecution of them, that they would be able to reach out and receive some compensation from your tax dollars, right? And it, and we always kind of forget to connect that dot. You know, we talk about this money as though it falls out of the sky. There's money trees instead of cherry trees in D.C. And, you know, we just go run around picking dollars off branches. I was proud that John Kennedy and others, obviously Bill Cassidy and the Speaker of the House, came out against this fund and basically are telling the Trump administration, you've lost your mind. There's no way that we're going to be in favor of this. And this is, although we don't see it very often, the type of independence that one would expect that our members of Congress, our elected officials, representing the state of Louisiana, and as the fiscal stewards of your tax dollars that are paid in federal income taxes, and other fees and everything else, should be protecting, right? And the Attorney General, Todd Blanche, before a committee the other day, said that this, they're not moving forward with the fund, period. That's it. Was asked several different ways, not moving forward ever. Correct. The problem is, they always leave themselves a little escape, a little caveat, right? Not willing to commit it to revoking the fund in writing. And has made other statements that this pending court action, where they anticipate getting a decision, I think, around June 12, that may have some influence in the future as to how they're going to ultimately deal with this. Now, this whole situation arises out of this lawsuit that the president, Donald Trump, has filed against the IRS for releasing his income tax returns. Obviously, the Democratic Party has been looking to get these income tax returns. It became an issue in the election that he was able to take all kinds of write-offs and things of that nature. Well, if it's in the tax code and he exercises what's in the tax code and he takes advantage of those provisions, so what? So what? If you don't like it, change the law. Plain and simple. But I don't know why anybody thinks there's a just criticism for people taking advantage of what's provided for in a tax code. Congress voted for it. If those Democratic members of Congress don't like the fact that that's what he did, maybe they need to, as the president pointed out, look to their folks that are giving them boatloads of money to see whether or not they're taking advantage of it as well. And they are. And members of Congress are taking advantage of it, too. I mean, that's the true irony here is, again, we're involved in the spin. It's about them and not about us. Right? And we'll continue to play this little silly game over and over again. But where I'm at now is I don't know why we're allowing this compromise to take place at all. Let's just prosecute the claim. Let's go to court. Trump believes that he's an aggrieved party. They released his income tax returns contrary to law. It was a contractor working for the IRS that did so. There's no question about that. That's been proven. And let's see what the valuation of this is. It's certainly not $230 million that he's asking for. But let's figure out what it is. How has he been impaired? Let's let him bring forward his best evidence to support his claim. Because this is the real problem here. They put this allure of this $1.8 billion fund out there. And I'm not the typical, you know, person, the Machiavellian individual that's always looking for the conspiracy, the sub-conspiracy, the backroom operation. But I am about this. Because in the end, Donald Trump's leaving with something more valuable than that $1.8 billion fund that he was going to create for others. He would not be able to avail himself of drawing upon any money out of that fund. But what he did avail himself from is that he would receive audit protection for his transactions for his returns, memorializing his transactions for a fairly lengthy period of time. We're not exactly sure because nobody's talking about, you know, the devil, which are the details, right? But what we're talking about is this immunity that he's going to get. He, his family members, and individuals that he has transacted business with, but we don't even know who they are. We don't have the list. We don't know any of this. We don't know who is going to come under this ambit of protection of this immunity deal that's been concocted. And that's being polite. This whole thing was a BS operation from the beginning, in my view, in order for him to get this. This is much more valuable than anything else out there. It was initially reported that he may even have immunity for future acts. Well, the AG says, well, no, that's not the case. Okay, well, when we see it in writing and we see the deal in writing, and there's been no assurances made that that actually was going to ever be revealed, I don't know about you, but my first reaction is that, Houston, we got a problem. The fix is in. Why is it that every time we get involved in these things, there's always something sinister and doesn't smell right about these deals? I mean, it's absolutely incredulous to me. Nothing seems to go easy with any of this. We're overreaching. We're trying to achieve things. We're trying to sanitize ourselves from any prosecution, you know, or anything else. And they have the audacity to say that this is not out of the ordinary. What? I've talked to folks about this that deal with the IRS all the time. This is not ordinary. They don't give, they don't throw these types of immunities out there for settlement of a lawsuit because some contractor revealed tax documents. How is he impaired? What are his true damages? So we're going to give him an immunity, obviously, that he really wants for some reason. You know, where we don't even know, we as taxpayers, we don't even know what the potential value is of any potential liability that he may have. We're just going to wave this magic wand and he's going to get this immunity. His family's going to get the immunity as well, all of his family members, as well as those that he's transacted business with. Now, I'm glad that Republicans and Democrats have gone after this $1.8 billion fund. But let's not stop there. Let's insist that he prosecute his claim. Let's direct the Attorney General to say, no, we're not going to compromise this. We're not going to settle it. We're going to go to court. And then let's just go to court and see, let the chips fall where they may. I don't know about you, but I'm done with this. I am done with this. And our elected officials in this state, they should be done with it as well. This is a crock. I think this whole thing was throw the carrot out there, the $1.8 billion fund, unheard of. Not unheard of that we're protect, that we want to protect people, right? Because let me just remind you about, you know, what the Biden family did, right? In fact, Jill Biden has just come out, you know, with this new book and admits the reason that we did the pardon for Hunter and all of these other people is we feared that, you know, this administration might go after them. Well, if they violated the law, they should go after them. I mean, I can understand your fear if you violated the law, right? But why would that be a justification for the president to create this immunity for these folks for their dastardly deeds? I mean, is that where we are in Washington today now? All we're concerned about is CYA. Immunity's running all over the place. We can go up there and engage in whatever activity we want, trade on insider information. There's new reports, you know, in advance of the Dell deal that all kinds of people all of a sudden found the Dell stock so attractive they couldn't help themselves and they were dropping millions of dollars on Dell. I mean, this is craziness. Stop talking about handcuffing yourselves that you and me and everyone else in this country, we would go to jail for this activity in a heartbeat. You think anybody would be talking about giving you immunity? You think anybody would be crafting a deal with the IRS for you to not go to jail? You got to be kidding me. They hanging out citizens every single day of the week. So why would we not hang out the number one alleged citizen, the President of the United States, prosecute your claim. You think you have a valid claim, prosecute it. We're not settling it. I don't know that we're true adversarial parties anyway. He's got control of the Department of Justice. This is a crock. Let's see where these Republicans in the state of Louisiana are going to fall on this. I would hope that somebody would ask John Fleming the question. Ms. Letlow the question. You think it's fair to give the president immunity for all of these deals? We don't know what the value of the potential claim may be. We're just going to write these blank checks and grant immunity for acts that we don't even know everything's about, but obviously they have some concern. We know what their fear is because they obviously want this. So much so that they're willing to take all kinds of criticism and put it out there. And shame on Todd Blanche. I mean, he should recuse himself. He was the president's criminal defense lawyer. And now he's going to be deciding on whether or not there's going to be immunity from criminal prosecution for his client? How does this work? I mean, it's almost at every level of government today. We have examples of it right here in Jefferson Parish, where we have folks that should recuse themselves from votes because they have all kinds of familial connections to all kinds of deals that are going on, and they refuse to do so. Why is that? Why is the IG and others and everybody else that should be holding their feet to the fire, why are they not going after these folks for these conflicts? We see it at the state level all the time. We just had another story with Senator Jay Morris, you know, about these land deals up there around Meta, had signed non-disclosure agreements and enacted upon the information that he was able to gain access to at some point in time. Why are we not looking into this? And then we have this at the highest level of our government. Of course, I've got all the folks that want to say that, you know, I'm playing both sides. I'm not playing a side, guys. You know, I considered the alternative. Let's make this completely transparent. Because I'm sick and tired of hearing it. You cast a vote for an individual based on policies. I do. Always considering the alternative. And if the alternative doesn't even come close to where I want to be in the balance of interest from a policy perspective, yes, there has been many times that I've had to hold my nose and cast a vote that I probably otherwise would not have made had there been a reasonable and viable alternative. And let me make it even clearer than that for all of you Democrats. In no scenario, almost none, I can say that I would have been able to cast a vote for Kamala Harris. None. Why, you ask? I don't think she had the intellectual oomph to handle the job. In fact, I was very surprised about her inability to really articulate around some of the most important issues facing this country today. I watched the way that she handled herself like a prosecutor, you know, in some of the Supreme Court nomination hearings and stuff, and I thought she was a lot smarter than what she ultimately ended up revealing through the course of the aftermath of those hearings as well as her campaign. Now, I can say that with full confidence because, unlike many of my Republican cohorts, I've actually walked across the aisle and endorse candidates publicly and consume political capital as a Republican and have been defrocked on three separate occasions, just as a reminder to those that I don't speak with a forked tongue. I've exhibited the willingness to step across the aisle. So yeah, you might say, oh, well, Johnny, come lately. I take it as it comes. This deal, as it has begun to reveal itself, stinks at all levels. At all levels. And our Republican leadership in this state needs to stand up and say, go prosecute your claim, Mr. President. We're not settling this. No way, no how. You believe it's worth a sum of money? Go prove it in a court of law. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser. Billy, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Noel.
Billy, let's start out. I want to talk about Canada. I've read a lot of articles. I read one the other day about Las Vegas getting hammered because of Canadians refusing to come to this country for a host of reasons that you and I have talked about before. I didn't realize Canadians were such gamblers, but it turns out they love Las Vegas. And, I mean, they're talking about record number impact to their overall take there. It shocked me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, right after the president made the announcement, wanted to make it the 51st state, and the tariffs, which I believe flipped that election from a conservative win to a liberal win in, up in Canada, we went up there, gave away Tabasco ice cream at four train stations to the public, got their take on it. But more importantly, we had dinner with the travel agents, and we also met with Canadian Air. And they're like, look, we can't send anybody to America because we'll lose all our business. And the airlines actually said they pulled their advertisement because they were getting so much hate mail. So it has outraged the Canadian people, and it has caused us to lose a lot of business because that was our biggest international market. Some of the tariffs have hurt us in other countries, but none like Canada. And the message was pretty clear. Either the president would have to apologize, or until he's out of office, they're not going to be pushing their travelers to come to America anywhere. And so we're going to continue to do what we do up there to keep that relationship, because they do love Louisiana. And so we're going to keep working it. We've backed off some of the spending up there because it's not working. And we're pivoted to some with the gas prices and airfares going up to drive market, and we're pushing again the staycations here in Louisiana as people cut back on their travel.
Yeah. I had occasion to interview the mayor yesterday. She joins me every month, like you do. And she had an opportunity to talk to some Canadian visitors for Sail 250. And they articulated much what you just said here. They absolutely love the city. They want to reestablish these relationships with this country. Obviously, it's hurt us here. But if anybody can be the salmon swimming upstream on this issue, I think it would be us, because of the French-speaking population that we have. You know, the closest that we have relative to our inhabitants here, and those that came through Canada to get here.
Yeah, you know, every 5 years I make sure to go to the Congre, which is all the Canadians that were kicked out from Louisiana all over the world go back there. It's a week-long celebration. At the end of the week, we all march down the street and have a big event at the festive grounds. I get up and speak to the whole crowd, as does many other of their politicians. But we've got a great relationship in doing that every 5 years. And then the next year, they always come to the Festive International in Lafayette. This year, all the elected officials there, some of them wrote me personally and said they're sorry, but they just can't come. it would be devastating to their political career to support anything in America right now. So it did hurt us this past year with Festival International Lafayette, but hopefully we can get through this and get back to those record numbers we saw from Canada, because they do see more than just one city or town. They travel throughout Louisiana.
Yeah, it's a shame. Hopefully we can get by this. I've heard you talk about the spend that they're responsible for in this country, and more articles are beginning to reveal it, about cities across the country. I heard what you're saying. It's not I didn't believe it, but I just didn't understand, the breadth and depth of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's some of the tariffs have hurt us in other countries, but not like this. The drop off from Canada has been substantial, and we don't see it coming back anytime soon.
Yeah. You recently were in D.C. Talking about the aerospace industry and the opportunities for Louisiana. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we formed a committee. I got the Lieutenant Governor's Association to form an aerospace committee. We brought a gentleman from LED up there. Dr. Tinsley from Nunez College is on that committee. And as well as other lieutenant governors, and everybody in the space industry was there. We got to hear from some of the national officials about what's coming in the space. And I tell you, the 3 days we were up there, the message is clear that if you build it, they will come. The workforce is what's needed. And I know the legislature passed some laws giving tax breaks and things to the space industry. And there's a lot of rumors about who's looking at land in Louisiana, but they need 1.4 million civilian aviation positions in this country. And it's only going to get worse as we're looking at space travel, where you go to space to go to foreign countries instead of international airlines anywhere in the world in 2 hours. We're looking at tourism, space travel, and we're looking at medical, where they can take part of your tissue, go to space, make your heart come back. You won't reject it because it's made with your tissue. But all this technology I've learned about over the last several years, and looking what other states like Austin's doing and Alabama. In Alabama, they're training kids in high school how to weld on spaceships. And so companies are looking at where are they training their workforce. That's why we were trying to get funded. Nunez College has a building donated. We were trying to get $9 million out of Baton Rouge this year. We weren't successful to outfit that building because they already have classes. They're training people for NASA and Stennis. That would really up our game in being able to train more workers. And we need to do that throughout the VOTEC schools.
No doubt about it. I mean, for sure. It's a huge upside opportunity. And with Mishu right here in our backyard, I mean, we should be able to leverage it, right?
Right. And, we have that corridor getting over to Mishu, a lot of empty buildings. I've heard over years they've moved out because of crime in that area. But that corridor really ought to be addressed with some economic benefit to get companies to move back into that area that support the space industry, whether we've got to block it off with fencing to keep it safe. But it's a shame when you drive into that facility to see all the empty buildings that used to be occupied by people in the space industry. So that's a corridor we could really come up with some incentive to bring some of those companies back.
Yeah, for sure. You also attended most recently the IPW conference that'll be headed to Louisiana next year. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, this is a real opportunity for us. We partnered with New Orleans and Company. Walt was over there. We had a press conference, got all the people excited about coming next year to New Orleans. That is the Super Bowl of tourism. There were about 6,000 people there in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale. We're expecting as many as 8,000. Every country in the world will be there, all the states. And it's just a great opportunity for us to get our partners from all over Louisiana and highlight all the great things and really put on a first-class show. We're hoping we can get some special events money because it takes money to put this event on. But it's perfect timing because 20, 28, 29, and 30 are expected to be real growth in the international market. I learned that from the head of tourism for the federal government that spoke at a lieutenant governor's conference months ago, saying those 3 years, they really expect the international market to come back. So it's a perfect time for us to be hosting that event and put our best foot forward.
Actually, I was down in Miami during part of that conference, and I saw a commercial that your office and the Office of Tourism sponsored on their digital boards, which was very well done, quite frankly. But it's interesting because I kind of just, we were standing there and I was just watching people as they go by to see if they would stop and look at it. And it's amazing how many people did. I was shocked.
You know, we put on a great display, a booth. We had the press come by the box, really great, served some Louisiana food. And I tell you, they had a fountain. It was decorated like the French Quarter, and they had a fountain with real water. And as I was speaking, a pigeon came out of the rafters to drink out the fountain. And so I told the crowd that I trained that pigeon, brought him all the way from New Orleans. But that was a lucky break, because that's all they were talking about was that pigeon came down to drink out of our fountain during the show. So Louisiana was able to steal the show. And we took over the lobby with all kind of pop-ups, lighted boards. They even had Louisiana pillows on the couches. I saw people sneaking them off, but it really, we put our best foot forward. And New Orleans and Company did a great job, their team there, as they always do, at getting people excited about coming next year.
Let's talk about your anti-littering campaign. We haven't talked about that in a while. How is that going?
Yeah, I tell you, once again, a record year. 26,000 volunteers, 81,000 hours, 1,400 events, picked up 514 tons of litter all over in every parish. You know, we're once again asking, if you didn't get involved, we're asking every Louisiana to pick up 250 pieces of litter before July 4th in celebration of our 250th anniversary. And then we're going to be rolling out soon, Love Our Waterways. The month of September, we're going to clean up every waterway in the state, every stream, canal. If you don't have a boat to go out and pick up litter, you can go along the shorelines, the banks of the rivers and streams. But we're going to keep this momentum going and clean up all of Louisiana. So it was another great year for Love the Boot Week. And a lot of those groups are now going out monthly and cleaning up in their area. And I got my hats off to DOTD and Wildlife and Fishery. Wildlife Fishery is putting cameras out. We're catching people. The hotline, 855-LA-LITTER. You get a ticket in the mail if somebody reports you. Don't worry, they don't know you turned them in. And we also have a new company. You can adopt a highway. Me and my wife adopted four miles of the interstate where we live in Covington. The sign will go up. We paid $18,000 a year for 2 years. They will keep that interstate clean. And with all the trial lawyer billboards, I'm hoping we can get them to adopt these highways, put a sign up where we get every interstate adopted, where they'll keep them clean with this private company. We won't need any tax dollars. And this advertisement from businesses will help keep all of our interstates clean. We looked at what was done in other states, and surely we can get enough people to step up, buy that advertising to keep our interstates clean. That will be a big step in the appearance of, when you come into Louisiana, that our interstates are clean.
Yeah, no, and I love that idea. There are other states doing it.
Yeah, that's where, you know, most of these ideas we steal from other states where it's working. Tennessee, the litter expert that we had hired brought all of the best practices from that state that we're in putting those in place. So it's working.
Yeah. As always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight, and thank you for all that you do. And have a great week.
Thank you, my friend. You too.
All right, that's Billy Nunn, guest, the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Louisiana. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. Folks, nothing's worse than losing power during summer and hurricane season, and that's why WWL has teamed up with Craig's Electrical and Generator to offer you the chance to win a Generac GP6500 portable generator. a nearly $1,000 value. It's happening now. Go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win. Comfort, security, peace of mind from Craig's Electrical and Generators, because when the power goes off, Craig comes on with WWL. I seem to have touched a chord with a number of folks saying that maybe I should recuse myself of public opinion, you know, as it relates to, I guess, when I said that in no way, shape, or form would I vote for Kamala Harris. I just didn't think that she had the oomph. I didn't believe that she had the leadership oomph. I didn't believe that she had the intellectual oomph to do the job. It was clear to me that when she was just trying to operate the vice presidential office, she was going through administrative aides and staff members like toilet paper. I mean, it was ridiculous. That's indicative of a failure of leadership in the organization. It was everybody else's fault. And what came to the forefront in the aftermath of all of this was a number of the staffers talking about how dysfunctional every day was in that office. You know, I mean, I don't know that if you were to believe that we have that same level of dysfunction, and I do believe that there is some of that going on, obviously, in the White House. We know about it. I don't deny it, that that was going to be any better than this. I suspect my intuition was probably right. It wasn't going to be any better. And, you know, a lot of it is who you surround yourself with. Obviously, Trump has had difficulty there. I think he's made some appointments that are not good. And again, if we had a proactive Congress, if we had an independent Congress, you know, that was worried about more than just perpetuating the party, we would be sending more signals to the White House to say, don't waste our time. We're not going to confirm that individual. Send somebody that's worthy. They've done that in some cases. They've not done that in other cases. And, you know, we've become this rubber stamp system for this. And, you know, and I know it creates frustration for the administration, but tough. I mean, we need the appropriate leaders in the appropriate positions. Both parties are guilty of this. I mean, you know, when you look at some of the folks that Biden had in the cabinet and in there, it's the same thing. I mean, we're doing it for political purposes as opposed for the right reasons. People that have exhibited leadership, that have actually accomplished something in their life and maybe actually have run something in their life, right? We're turning over organizations with billion-dollar budgets to people that have never run anything. How does that work? We'll be right back.